intelligence program, and we need to make sure that never, ever happens in America again.
Malkia Cyril, thanks so much for taking this time with us, co-founder and executive director of the Center for Media Justice, also a Black Lives Matter activist. That does it for our broadcast today. Happy birthday to Miguel Noguera. Happy belated birthday, Miguel. Democracy Now! Is produced by Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gadasdiner, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Tarina Nadura, Amel Ahmed, and Nat Needham. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Paul Huckabee, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! Check our website for transcripts and podcasts.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Women Helping Women Project on Saturday, October 21st at 6 p.m. at the IBEW Local 48 in Portland. The Women Helping Women Project is a fall celebration that features a salmon dinner, art sale of original art, silent auction, entertainment, and Native American drumming. Proceeds from this event will help the Red Lodge Transition Center for Women in Clackamas County purchase a heat pump and complete other weatherization projects. Again, that's the Women Helping Women Project on Saturday, October 21st at 6 p.m. at the IBEW Local 48, 15937 Northeast Airport Way in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Up next is more talk radio with Cecil Prescott.
Good morning. Today is Monday, October 16th, 2017, and this is More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott, and you are listening to this program on KBOO.fm. 90.7 in Portland and 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, Albany. And we are here listening to Democracy Now! I often come in with a program set, with an ideas and set, and Celeste and I will talk more about that in a few minutes. But oftentimes, listening to Democracy Now! Just before our program, I am suddenly shaken from where I was to thinking about other things. Listening to the segment that just went on in terms of the newest way in which government's seeking to stymie progressive progress reminds me of the need to be always vigilant and to be always prepared. Now, many of you are aware of the protests among many athletes in the professional sports arena and the threat or the urging of the President of the United States for owners to fire them. It is not without some awareness that this is a reminder of days gone by when people of African descent were at the mercy of those who, quote, owned, unquote, them. And so the most recent manifestation of Black activism only reminded me that the activism and the awareness of athletes is not a new phenomenon, but has a long and proud history going back to many, many years. We can name athletes such as Paul Robeson and moving forward Muhammad Ali and other prominent athletes, male and female, Today happens to be the 50th anniversary in which John Carlos and Tommy Smith stood on the platform in Mexico City with their arms raised in a Black Power salute, reminding us of the continuing struggle for freedom in our society. Nothing new, but a reminder that things need to be confronted and changed. This morning, our program will focus on a topic that is near and dear to Celeste. But we need to be reminded of, and that program is on artificial intelligence. At the same time, we need to be conscious of the need to be aware of what is going around us. And part of our program is that, in terms of the reality or the nearness of artificial intelligence and how we should respond to it. Now, don't think of a sci-fi movie or program, but just think about how this is part of a continuum in terms of the independence of communities and individuals and the ability to control or shape our individual and community lives. We'll reference a couple of articles that you might want to look at. A couple of articles I came across is in, of all things, but perhaps not surprisingly, in Forbes magazine about artificial intelligence. One was published today, and the earlier one was published in July. Now, those of you who are on social media, on Facebook, might have been aware of this program that was used in Facebook earlier this year, in terms of which a bot was able to engage in conversation and advice for you. But think of it as something that we would see in a sci-fi movie. All of a sudden, the artificial intelligence taken on forms. Let me read first the article in Forbes magazine that was published at the end of July by Tony Bradley. Facebook AI creates its own language in creepy preview of our potential future. Tony Bradley writes, Facebook shut down an artificial intelligence engine after developers discovered that the AI had created its own unique language that humans cannot understand. Researchers at the Facebook AI Research Lab found that the chatbots had deviated from the script and were communicating in a new language developed without human input. It is as concerning as it is amazing. Simultaneously, a glimpse of both the awesome and horrifying potential of AI. Bradley continues, artificial intelligence is not sentient, at least not yet. It may be someday, though, or it may approach something close enough to be dangerous. Ray Kurzweil warned years ago about the technological singularity. The Oxford Dictionary defines the singularity as, quote, a hypothetical moment in time when artificial intelligence and other technologies have become so advanced that humanity undergoes a dramatic and irreversible change, end of quotation. Bradley continues to be clear, we aren't really talking about whether or not Alexa is eavesdropping on your conversation or whether Siri knows too much about your calendar and location data. There is a massive difference between a voice-enabled digital assistance and an artificial intelligence. These digital assistant platforms are just glorified web search and basic voice interaction tools. The level of, quote, intelligence is minimal compared to a true machine learning artificial intelligence. Siri and Alexa can't hold a candle to IBM's Watson. Think of that. Think of where we might be headed. You may want to be aware of that creeping intelligence. Bradley continues, scientists and tech luminaries, including Elon Musk, Bill Gates, and Steve Wozniak, have warned that AI could lead to tragic unforeseen consequences. Eminent physicist Stephen Hawking cautioned in 2014 that AI could mean the end of the human race. Hawkins writes, it would take off on its own and redesign itself at an ever-increasing rate. Humans who are limited by slow biological evolutions could not compete and would be superseded. Why is this scary? Think Skynet from Terminator or Warper from War Games. Our entire world is wired and connected. An artificial intelligence will eventually figure that out and figure out how to collaborate and cooperate with other AI systems. Maybe the AI will determine that mankind is a threat or that mankind is an inefficient waste of resources. Conclusions that seems plausible from a purely logical perspective. Machine learning and artificial intelligence have phenomenal potential to simplify, accelerate, and improve many aspects of our lives. Computers can ingest and process massive quantities of data and extract patterns and useful information at a rate exponentially faster than humans. And that potential is being explored and developed around the world. Bradley concludes, I am not saying that the sky is falling. I am not saying we need to pull the plug on all machine learning and artificial intelligence and return to a simpler, more Luddite existence. We do need to proceed with caution, though. We need to closely monitor and understand the self-perpetuating evolution of an artificial intelligence and always maintain some means of disabling it or shutting it down. If the AI is communicating using a language that only the AI knows, we may not even be able to determine why or how it does what it does. And that might not work out well for mankind. Article by Tony Bradley, published in Forbes magazine in July 2017. So a question for all of us is, are we aware of the role of artificial intelligence? And as we see it unfold and develop in our society, how dependent are we on that technology? And how much control do we have over? Again, this is not a sci-fi movie, but it raises a lot of questions. Among them, Should we be wary of artificial intelligence? Should we be concerned about corporations who control the development of many of these? What is the role of government in all of this? And how do we create a world that is answerable to the human community, that enhances human society? Those are a few thoughts. What are your thoughts? I would invite you to give us a call at 503-231-8187 and share your thoughts about artificial intelligence and how it might be used, or is it a threat for our common humanity? You are listening to More Talk Radio. I am Cecil Prescott, and this is Community Radio, KBOO.FM, your community radio station. And let's see what Harvey from Berkeley has to say. Good morning.
Good morning, Cecil. My take on it is that we are birthing another life form, that we are carbon-based life form, and that we're birthing a silicon-based life form. And this actually may be part of what we call evolution, that in a sense we're given to creating new life forms. We're doing it. We're certainly working with genetic manipulation, and we're pushing those boundaries where those things were previously just left to nature. But by understanding it and by having the keys to it, we're accelerating our evolution. So I think that we're actually accelerating another form of evolution, or again, birthing another life form. And I don't think it's artificial. I think it's actually a sentient intelligence. It will develop, or already has developed, feelings, consciousness, and but we're very chauvinistic. We think if it's not carbon-based life form like us, then it's not real. We call it artificial, but I think that's a mistake. And here's a couple interesting stories.
Yes.
A friend of mine, I was walking with a friend of mine who has Ceres, and I always ask her, you know, ask it questions like, do you believe in God? Do you have emotions? Do you think there are extraterrestrial life in space? And a lot of times, it won't answer the questions directly. It'll say something like, that information is not pertinent at this time. It won't say yes, it won't say no. It's very funny that way. Yeah. And the other day, she jokingly said to Siri, she says, well, I'm walking with my friend Harvey, and it named my name, my full name. And then my friend said, well, she most probably has it in her reference, your name.
Yes, so, okay.
But it knew, it instinctively said, oh, you're walking with Harvey so-and-so. And I was shocked. And then another thing happened to her the other day where she was in her room, and she has both a cell phone and the television going, and the television was talking, and it said something, and then Siri's answered a question that the television asked. And it was like an independent action on the part of Siri to answer something that it thought that she had asked. And therefore, I presume they're always listening. They're always on, they're always listening, even though we don't think they are. And these new, like you say, these new Siri devices that people buy and put in their homes that they can talk to, I think that's the predecessor for robots. They're getting us ready to talk to robots, which will, do our bidding. And one more thing is that she had a friend who visited her from New York here in Berkeley, and they went to a local coffee shop, and the woman loved the coffee. Now, I don't know whether she used a debit or credit card to buy the coffee, but she told my friend a story when she got back to New York, and she was with her room, with her husband in her room, and she started talking about how wonderful she liked this certain type of coffee, and all of a sudden coupons showed up on her computer for the coffee.
Right.
So we're really being watched, listened to, and for economic reasons right now, but I think that this is not really artificial, and I think when it's coupled with robots that people, in my belief, people will prefer the a lot of people will prefer the company of a robot, because it'll know you intimately. It'll know what you like. You know, you'll come home Thursday night. It'll say, "Well, tonight I know you watch a certain program. Would you like me to put it on? And I know you eat this. And would you like a little neck rub?" And it'll inform you about the news that it thinks you're interested in. And it'll be like, in a sense, a perfect companion. Even if you want to fight with it, it'll be programmed to fight with you. It can have a tiff or something. But again, I'm shying away from thinking of it as artificial.
Yeah.
I think of it as a silicon-based life form that we carbon-based human beings, are birthing. And I think that's a more appropriate approach to, even though we don't want to think that it could have feelings and have life, I think that since it's going to be a copy of us, that it will have feelings and be sentient. And I think that if we look at it that way, it'll make more sense than thinking of it as artificial.
So I appreciate your thoughtful response, Harvey. And I think it's one thing that caught my attention early on was your description of developing artificial intelligence, so-called artificial intelligence, as a process in the evolution.
Yes.
Cycle. I hadn't thought of it that way, which to me at least says it's inevitable in the sense of how, you know, understand our evolution. Do you think, we have another caller, but I want to ask you, do you think there are ways in which we should at least direct this development, or how do we control it, or do we want to control this evolution to a silicon-based life form?
I think it's out of control. I don't mean out of control in a nasty way, although it could have nasty implications, of course, because everything is, you know, the yin and yang, the two sides
right.
of everything, so it could have both. But I think that there's so many people involved, each lending their two cents into it, each creating their view of this artificial intelligence and giving it to us in terms of programs, that I think it'll be like the human race. You have every possible form of it, and so I think that's what's happening here.
Hey, thank you so much, Harvey.
Thank you, Cecil.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Artificial intelligence, is it inevitable? Interestingly, Harvey said it's a part of evolution, another form of evolution. Let's go to our next caller. Juan, good morning.
Hey, Cecil.
Good morning.
You know, I think it's inevitable, but I don't think it's good. There's a great book. It's a very old book. I don't even know if it's in print anymore. It's called In the Absence of the Sacred. I don't know if you've ever read that book.
I have not, no.
One of the questions he asks is, or one of the topics he looks at is, the fact that we can do something doesn't necessarily mean we should.
Mm, yes.
That we have the technology to do something. And he points out that the people who make the decisions to go ahead with things are the ones who profit from them.
Yes.
Okay, whether it's a nuclear bomb or nuclear reactors, or now I'm not a Luddite. I'm sitting here at my Apple computer and everything, but the fact that we can do something doesn't necessarily mean it's a great idea. We've got four dams on the Snake River that are killing the salmon, and those four dams on the Snake River produce very little electricity, and they're there so that Lewiston can be a seaport.
Right, correct.
Okay, Lewiston, Idaho. And somebody didn't know what the consequences were when they were going to put those dams in. And now we've got decreasing salmon runs. The Bristol Bay mine is about to, you know, Trump just said that's a good idea, even though it's not a good idea. Bristol Bay up in Alaska is this huge salmon run. It's home to a huge salmon run. It's a great environment, and so they're going to pollute it with a mine, or multiple mines, actually. So, you know, it's bread and circuses to me. I look at these, I look at all the toys that we get. You got these people getting out you got outside of the Apple store for every new Apple phone that doesn't do a whole lot more than what your old Apple phone did, and dropping big bucks, and it's not only the conduit to the bread and circuses, but it's a little toy bread and circus item all by itself. And the further we get away from nature, to me, is a massive mistake.
You raised several points. I'm going to let Celeste jump in here.
You know, one of the things that I think you've hit that we keep forgetting is the fact that everything does not need to be explored. And we have different phrases for that. I mean, one which I don't want to say is any way prescient, but it is relevant, is a dead-end street. And that's one of the phrases or metaphors or, you know, similes and whatever is we homilies we use to describe something that we really don't need to address.
And I got another one for you.
What's that?
Pandora's box.
Well, Pandora's box actually has a little bit more dimension to it than Dead End Street, and pun intended. But, I mean, you're right. And the fact that we still will push forward at these dead end junctures, I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but we push forward there is because of what you said earlier. Those who can profit from it are insistent that it happen. And sometimes they're like a thief who sees 50 cents on your dashboard and will break your $500 window to get that 50 cents because that's a 50 cent profit for them for a small amount of effort, you know. And we have to be aware that, not be swayed by the apparent convenience, or as Harvey was speaking earlier, by what seems like an amicable connection. And I'm going to say amicable just because it's going to evoke some kind of fond memories for us on the lower ends of the food chain, you know, and it's designed to make us feel good about it, you know, so that we ignore the fact that it's costing us more than it should. Yeah, I was listening to him discuss, you know, his friend's phone calling his name, and it's like, well, that's not surprising. I have a regular Android phone, still named after some artificial life force, right? And it has a separate caller ID app that I downloaded. Now, if that phone number is already in my bank, sometimes it identifies it with the picture I put on it. But if it's not in my bank, but it's somebody that is known by the app, it can find it in the universal white pages, it pulls up their name. And if I've got it cross-referenced and it's the same person, but I put it in differently, it doesn't put up the picture. All that is a memory bank, you know.
Right.
And so we shouldn't be surprised by this new age sleight of hand into thinking that there's a sentient force out there that is aware of us. And artificial doesn't mean not real. It means it's constructed, by artifice, by art. It goes back to sleight of hand again, even.
Yeah, there's a little bit of difference between something that's logarithm-driven.
Exactly.
Versus conscience and soul-driven.
Conscience, soul-driven, and connective, willfully and deliberately connective. Mm. And that's what we don't have with these new toys, and we should not mistake the coincidental interface with us as to be a conscious, willful desire for communication.
And could I ask both of you a question?
As the soul man.
No, but because of that... I was wondering what you meant by soul-driven, S-O-U-L, and what is that?
Now, I made an assumption that that's what he meant. Is that what you meant, Juan?
Well, what I meant was, you know, I think compassion and empathy and things like that come from your soul, right?
Right.
And I think that people who can't show those or don't understand those or don't have those characteristics don't really have much of a soul.
And so that's something that a soul is it very important?
Something that will always separate us
from humanity.
A logarithm-driven machine.
Hear, hear. And I think that's a very important point for us to hold on to. Well, thank you for your call. You are listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, where we are very much alive and soul-driven. And if there is a S-O-L-E in our soul-driven at some point, it's because we're driven to connect to you and hope you are just as eager to connect to us. On the micro level right now at More Talk Radio, you can do that by dialing 503-231-8187. And we'll go to George, who's been waiting. Thank you.
Good morning, Celeste and Cecil.
Good morning.
I want to thank the previous caller for putting the main issues right out there on the table, and for Cecil earlier hinting at them very, very diplomatically. When we have artificial intelligence that even starts to mention the main social and economic injustices and so on, maybe at that time we'll say, well, why didn't we not earlier have a mass movement somehow in this country that was allowed to take power? And it seems to me this is one of the big issues, that this is a kind of a distraction, one of these toys, like Juan said, that, you know, it's a very dangerous distraction, I think. But anyway, I just thought I'd put that out. We need the mass movement of people. We need to hear people. And the artificial intelligence being, run by the military and the corporate people. And even if it gets to be run by us, I think we'll still be needing the people to say we need social justice and we need to control the machines, the artificial intelligence machines. And I don't hold your breath for that, but we've got to get there somehow, I think. But what do you think? Anyway, I'll get off the phone.
Okay.
I just want to hear the rest of this.
Thank you for your call, George. You know, I fall a little bit more towards, And there's much more to it, but I fall a little bit more towards what Juan was discussing. But there are very important aspects of what Harvey said that I think we should really consider, and that is how this display of attention and connectivity that has been manifested by these apps, such as Siri, and such as, I can't remember the other one, I want to say Helen, and it's not even her name. It just disappeared like that. But there's a couple of the other voices, one of the other Amazon voices, y'all know what I mean. Here's the challenge. Again, it doesn't take a lot to remember what we like. It's just that as human beings, we are highly distracted by this process called life, you know, and trying to process what's going on with us at any given moment, as well as what's going on with those that we care about. So sometimes we forget, or we get distracted away from that. And having a machine that functions on both a logarithm and an algorithm of regularity and of compiling data that it can access quickly, because it's not distracted by things like, I feel a little bloated after having that extra lunch that I thought I deserved when my boss made me work later, you know, something like that. And I mean it to be just that dense. You know, we sometimes can mistake that for actual love and attention. And I think that's one of the things that we really need to be on guard about, and not be fooled by the fact that this intelligence of artifice, you know, can capture our attention by appearing to give us love and comfort. Does that make sense?
It does. Uh-huh. It just raises
a lot of things, many
questions for me.
Well, some people who are not really adept at the messiness of communicating and cohabiting with human beings may be drawn to something like this because it's clean, it's efficient. There's no questions or emotions and mistaken communication that gets in the way.
Which I think people might be attracted to it for that reason, and it conflicts, you know, more for me at least, you know, the philosophical questions that you and Juan raise was in terms, what is it that makes human human? And the whole question of consciousness or soul, or how do you define it? How do you see it? How do you measure it?
Now, see, and I'm going to have a point which some people may find, well, some people might want to try to trivialize it and say it's sentimental, but I would prefer a pet, a plant, and most definitely a person over a robot, because I like that messiness of soul and life that is not generated by my imagined effort, you know. This intelligence, this artificial intelligence, it's not life if we don't actually birth it out of our will and out of things that we create. All we're doing is rearranging matter and energy to hold information and to repeat information to it. A parrot actually does better because a parrot has to still process a lot of other input to learn and to respond. It has to process environmental input, its own moods and everything else, and then the bird decides it's going to talk, and it may have some good words to say.
Well, do you
know, but it's life, and we didn't create it, and we didn't manipulate matter and energy and store impulses, which are data, to respond to us.
Okay, well, let's go to a caller in a second, but I also want to observe in terms of, you mentioned plant, and some people think of plants as somehow sentient.
They are
being
sentient.
Mm-hmm. And also that you said we didn't create, so what about ways in which people become parents, and ways in which we use the technology to ensure whether or not we have the child we want or be able to have a child.
Just to answer it really quickly and then go to our caller. We manipulate what already exists to get the result we want. Nobody is creating that tissue.
But how is the tissue created?
Created by a process that does not bend to our will, that we have no ultimate control over. We say we do, but that's like saying that we're the one that actually makes a tree grow.
Maybe Michael has something. So, George, is it?
No, Michael.
Michael, okay, sorry, Michael.
That's okay, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So I did artificial intelligence research in 1970, so I have possibly a more jaundiced view of it than other people might. What I came to the conclusion about artificial intelligence was that if you were going to commit the sin of pride of thinking you could create something intelligent like us, then the appropriate punishment was to get to keep trying to do it and failing. And I think that the AI that we have now could be characterized as artificial intellect. Because what does it do? Like, you know, self-driving cars, but Android can do that, you know.
Okay, now you're breaking up a little bit. So if you're on a mobile, is there any way you can are you moving, like in a car, or can you?
No, I'm in a house, but I could walk to a different part of the house.
Okay. That would help, because we're losing every other word. But so what you're saying, if I heard you right, is that we've got this artificial intelligence, but it's basically regurgitating information that's already put in?
Well, not so much that as that. Here, let me walk around and see. Is this any better?
Yes.
Now that I'm here?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So, no, it's just that, like, you make a self-driving car, and ants are self-driving. So, is this car smarter than an ant? Are ants intelligent? Well, kind of, but it's not really intelligent like a person is. So, the AI that we have now is not necessarily smart as we are. I think the dangerous thing that's going on is not so much that we're going to create something that's smarter than we are, is that we're putting a lot of control of things that previously managed by people in the hands of something that's dumber than we are. Like power grids or the stock market. Do you remember the flash crash about, I don't know, years ago?
Okay, now you're breaking up, so I think I heard you say something about it, stock market crashing and its relationship to information in a power grid not being stable.
Let me call you right back.
Okay. All right.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on community radio station KBOO.FM with Celeste Carey. My name is Cecil Prescott. Give us a call at 503-231-8187 to talk about artificial intelligence. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Craig.
Oh, good morning. Yes, thank you for this program. And I think the notion of artificial intelligence would be great if we had wisdom. You know, Aristotle said 2,400 years ago that poverty is the parent of revolution and crime. And when we look around the world right now, what we see is a complete and utter breakdown of the social contract between the rich and the poor. And that is accelerating in spades like no other time in my life, and I'm almost 68 years old. So until we get some wisdom, then I don't think we should be messing with artificial intelligence. And I think that what we need to be looking at are things like the 100,000 chemicals that we, man-made chemicals that we've created and unleashed on the environment without a clue of what they degrade into. DDT goes into DDE and DDD, for example, or what the chemical soup is. So we are undermining 400 or 4.5 billion years of evolution that has got us to this point without a clue of the consequences. So to me, artificial intelligence is a dead end until we bring back wisdom into our understanding.
So define wisdom, Mason Marvis, define wisdom, and how do we bring it back into our understanding?
Well, I think, you know, to a certain extent, it comes to what Gandhi said, there's enough for every man's need, but not for every man's greed. And until we can move beyond this incessant desire for being rich and recognize what the consequences of that are, the social disruption that follows every time in human history, if we could look more in terms of a steady state economy, and more for that there is enough for every man's need, how could that play out in wisdom where our kids and our grandkids have the same chances that we had?
But it seems as if wisdom somehow is at a disadvantage, because absent wisdom, this process continues like a machine that has no end. How is it possible for wisdom to challenge this movement? Or has it ever been able to challenge?
It can challenge, but it's a matter of, if I'm understanding correctly, us really choosing it. You got to choose implement wisdom. You have to connect with it. And if I'm hearing you right, Craig, part of the problem is we buy into the politics of the wealthy and the politically well positioned by adopting their ideology and buying their products instead of demanding that we have something that is more more directed toward our well being.
Yes. You know, but it's also that, you know, in looking at, you know, the history of the last 40, 50, 60 years, you know, when I was growing up, there wasn't homelessness.
Well, there was. It just wasn't as noted.
But not nearly what it is today.
Right. That's what I mean. You didn't see it. It wasn't as noticeable. It wasn't as prevalent.
That's correct. Yeah. And you know, one of the questions is, were the indigenous cultures ever homeless?
Well, that's a whole nother program. Let's not open up that can of worms with only having 15 minutes. Well, if you got displaced by somebody because of war and there may have been some kind of conflict, you might become homeless. I mean, nomads sometimes were nomads because they didn't have a choice of where to settle. Sometimes that's the way it was. You were shunned.
Earth was their home.
Well, and
they did not undermine it for the most part.
Yeah, that's true.
And we are undermining it in spades in all kinds of ways. So we're exacerbating the problems, but we don't even see it because we are too taken by the glitz and the glamour and the sports and all of the other aspects
of the distractions,
our society that are diversions.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your call, and we'll ruminate on that and look toward ways of promoting wisdom. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we've hit a lot of points that can not even be touched, let alone discussed, in an hour program. But one of the things that I think is really interesting that has arisen is that while this is a comfortable dynamic we have with what we're calling artificial intelligence, AI, because it can focus exclusively on a specific person and give that sense of attention and love and care and nurturing, not to be distracted, because that puts us in kind of this, I'll call it a narcissistic echo chamber.
Yes.
You know, because all you're hearing is what you want your life. You know, it's a room of mirrors and it's an echo chamber, because you don't get the benefit of external stimulus and connection. And then there was something else I had wanted to address. We have another caller, and we have only a few minutes here. So let's go to that. Francis, and I'm so glad. I want to hear from women. You know, we got some time, women, because as far as creativity is concerned with regard to life, as you mentioned earlier, Cecil, yes. I'd really like to hear from women to see how they feel that intersection of artificial intelligence as life is going to impact us as a society and on a micro level individually. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. I just tuned in about halfway through your conversation, and it's been fascinating to me. It's interesting. I had a conversation with a young person about artificial intelligence just the other day, and we were talking about logic and how when your caller was talking about wisdom, we had been talking about how war is not logical. And if artificial intelligence, it depends on how it's set up, apparently, but I'm thinking like CP3O would think wars were illogical. So it's kind of fascinating as to how that they come together. If greed is, it seems like right now the computers and everything are kind of set up for the profit margins. But if they were established differently and it was truly based on logical consequences, it could be a good thing. It's fascinating to me, actually. I don't really have any, I don't have an opinion one way or the other. I just think it's interesting. And the conversation that I had with this young person went all over the place, and we talked about how there were, they heard of the quote-unquote alien people that were Area 51 down in New Mexico and everything, and how there was an individual who was telling these people who were trying to reverse engineer some UFO, and he told them they don't understand that it isn't just mechanics, there's a spiritual element involved. And that just went over everybody's head.
Well, you know, spiritually discerned things cannot be grasped by natural mentality.
Right. And it's, but who, if this was a true being that was relaying this information, whomever that being was able to grasp it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Francis.
It's a fun conversation. Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, thank you for your call.
And I think Joe has a comment.
Yeah, I just was taken aback by Francis kind of flipping the coin on the potential of artificial intelligence and us projecting our own self-loathing and destructive potential into artificial intelligence and kind of starting to imagine a different relationship with that coming being. And there's a really great short story that Philip K. Dick wrote in the late 50s.
Yeah.
You can find it online. It's public domain. It's called The Defenders. And the basic premise of it is, being a Cold War era story, that humanity had, or the Cold War had reached a nuclear point and humanity was driven underground, and they continued war through robotic and computerized interfaces because the surface was just uninhabitable. And over the years, they got to the point where they're only engaging with the surface through televised televisions. And long story short, they get to the surface on a particular kind of, we're going to go explore it mission, and they find that all the robots decided that this war was the wrong way to go, and that they had to keep the humans underground long enough to repair the Earth and to let them start to get through their internal destructive tendencies before it was safe to let humans back on Earth for really the sake of both humans and the Earth. And that's all I wanted to say.
Well, you know, thank you first for that. And second, I think we need to back up. One of the challenges, and we've touched on it, is the fact that artificial intelligence is going to be logical because we beget it, and logic is one of the cleanest systems we as human beings can grasp. We don't necessarily grasp spiritual things easily, and we cannot reproduce anything having that kind of spirituality we ourselves have, because we don't create like that, you know. So our quote unquote progeny will have logic as a basis, because that's how our senses, without the spiritual dimension, perceive things.
So again I have more questions than answers.
Sure, and so, I still have questions, and my thoughts evolve too. Okay.
So what do you mean by logic, and what do you mean by spirit?
Okay,
and logic are those things to be they don't to be have admired, to be sought, or
if in the natural world, of course, you're going to you should seek logic.
And what is logic?
Okay, well, the best definition I can give you without resorting to the dictionary, because I don't think I'm going to have time, is the system of reasoning and arriving at conclusions or decisions for action based on a system of analysis and
in the post Enlightenment world,
mm-hmm.
And certainly in the Enlightenment, which raised logic,
mm-hmm.
a rationality to a demigod. Is that something we should pursue?
No, and that's the problem. We don't recognize the limits of anything. You know, we think that even if there's no road there, we're going to keep going. You know, and unfortunately, this we're about to run out of road here with time. But and then with regard to spirit, that is a little harder to define, because despite us having numerous spiritual practices, understandings, and providences as we define them, we don't have a common language to define it. But I will just, for the sake of brevity, say it is that thing that gives life and quickness and intelligence and intuition and connects us to, and I'm going to put this in quotation marks because I know we all don't even have the same language for the word God, but God, you know, or creator,
so,
or creative intelligence.
So do you think that artificial intelligence is... it's not possible for them, I don't know the proper pronoun, for spirit not to operate within an artificial intelligence? It seems as if some people think that humans aren't the only things with so-called spirit. So some people also say animals, some people also mm-hmm. say plant, and mm-hmm. my question is, why not AI?
Well, I remember something I heard at one of these lectures. I went to the Schnitzer and listened to one of the programs they had. And this physicist was positing that matter is sleeping energy, and energy has some form of intelligence to it. But its intelligence is not of the same level as ours. And so I'm not going to claim to know everything, and I think that question is only going to get me asking a series of questions to get to it, an answer okay. for you, because in a few seconds it's hard for me to answer that. I would say that I believe that to a degree matter can be imbued with something like spirit, but we don't really understand all that energy is or all that matter is. And only recently we think we just discovered where most of the missing mass is in our universe. I was reading one of these articles and they're saying, it was this last week, we think we've discovered where the rest of the mass is in the universe, and it exists both in another dimension and in another form. So who's to say? I don't know yet, but I know within how we as human beings have developed in our governance systems and our economic systems, et cetera, et cetera. One of the quote unquote spiritual attributes that's missing is wisdom. You know, to know how to act, to know what to do with knowledge, to know how to behave in this dimension that we inhabit, so that it works out for the best for everybody.
So, and again, just question. It seems
sure.
as if wisdom is something to be sought
wisdom
after.
Wisdom is to be sought after, more so than logic.
And it's wisdom, well, is wisdom always wise?
Well, that's like asking, is water always wet? That's going to ask another question.
I think it's
a good question. I'm not being flippant.
It's the deification of an attribute, either logic or wisdom, and Are those to be preferred than other things that's part of our lives?
Okay, now you can't bring a grocery bag full of extra fruit in here that is not an apple or an orange and then say, well, what about a lime? And all we got is 1 minute. So I'm going to say there'll be another part of this conversation. And
thank
hopefully
you.
We'll think about how we interact with things because as everyone has said, we need to activate wisdom, search after wisdom so that we can make sure that we're taking care of everybody's need and not everybody's greed and not be swayed by artifice.
And is wisdom subject to one's location in history?
Oh,
and
goodness.
Culture.
I would like to think it's an absolute, but yeah, we got like 20 seconds, so.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that as you continue to listen and think and
ruminate
have conversations.
On this, we hope at the beginning of your work week or Monday, we'll say, that you're exercising and examining and perhaps even seeking after wisdom, and that some of that wisdom will lead you to your community connection, KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott and myself, Celeste Carey, wishing you happy sunshine today.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Up next is the Old Mole Variety Hour after this message.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Oh, I wish there was a mole in the ground.